Nothing could displace the Flint water crisis is the top Michigan news story in March. Governor Snyder appeared in Washington before a hostile congressional committee. A task force issued an analysis that laid the main blame at the feet of the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, but also found fault with the Snyder administration. It also said environmental injustice was a factor in the Flint emergency. To discuss and to update these stories for Current State's Month in Review, I want to welcome back the Detroit Free Press's Kathleen Gray and Gongwer News Zach Gorchow. Welcome
Hi,
to both of
hey.
You. Zach, a joint legislative committee held one of its meetings in Flint just a couple of days ago. What was this about?
Well, it took a while for the legislature to decide that the water crisis was worthy of legislative hearings. Finally, they did get around to holding a lengthy hearing in Flint with a new committee solely to deal with the Flint water emergency. They took many, many hours of testimony. And really, there were two interesting pieces that I thought came out of it. One, they had a key City of Flint water department person come in and take a lot of questions and provide a lot of testimony that I thought shed some light onto the interactions between the City of Flint and the Department of Environmental Quality in terms of the decision on not to apply corrosion control treatment to the water once they started pulling it from the Flint River. So it's been said ad nauseum, the decision not to use a corrosion control treatment allowed the more corrosive river water to leach lead into the water from the lead service lines.
Whose ox got gored in that encounter? Did the city official end up looking better? Did it make MDEQ look even worse than they already look? Or how did the dust settle on that?
I thought the DEQ came out looking worse. You know, the Snyder administration has really tried to, you know, has put this emphasis on failure of government at all levels, one of that being the local government. And it has pointed to decisions within the water department not to apply corrosion control treatment and just its overall management of water. But it sounded like Flint hadn't produced its own water in half a century. They had been drawing from the Detroit system, and they didn't have the experience or the staff or the expertise to really do this. So they really were relying on the DEQ to tell them what to do.
Could you say the Flint committee meeting was intended as an opportunity for Flint residents to vent at
Yes.
members of the legislature?
And I thought that served a really important purpose. I mean, the congressional hearings were really the first chance to call some people to account. But this was really the first chance on a statewide level for Flint residents to really give the legislature a piece of its mind about what they were experiencing.
Kathy Gray, last week's biggest development was likely the release of the Flint Water Task Force report. This is the group created by the governor to analyze what went wrong and how and to make recommendations. Remind us what the big takeaways were from that.
Well, again, the DEQ came in for a lot of criticism in that report, and Governor Snyder came in for some criticism, too, because of the way the culture in the administration and how they were dealing with people. They also talked about something called environmental justice in this report and how, you know, Flint residents weren't paid attention to. They were just ignored, dismissed, all their complaints that started almost immediately as the water changed in 2014. They were complaining about it, looking for answers, and they weren't getting any. And in fact, that they were just treated pretty shabbily. And it has to do with poverty. It has to do with racism. It has to do with all sorts of things.
Was this the first time that notion has been raised? How often has that come up as a factor in Flint?
Did this raise it to a new level of awareness? No, it's been brought up before. I mean, Hillary Clinton talked about it way back in December, saying, you know, if this had happened in Bloomfield Hills or Plymouth or some other community, that it would have gotten a lot of attention sooner. And so it certainly is a notion out there, and it's a notion that's been out not only in Flint but in Detroit and other places too.
I spoke with the Snyder administration spokesman Ari Adler back on Monday and asked him what Governor Snyder makes of the environmental injustice charge. Full disclosure, this is an edited version of his answer, but here is Ari Adler.
Well, certainly there is no decision that was made specifically because of anyone's particular race or what the population of a city is. What you are finding in situations like this, though, is that when you have a city that has socioeconomic challenges like Flint does with unemployment and education issues and everything else that's going on there, it can be much more difficult to recover. And that's why the governor's plan to restore the water in Flint is really about restoring Flint as a city. So we're looking at not just what's going on with water and water quality, but also looking at health care and education and jobs and economic development.
Zach, what do you make of that response?
I mean, the governor's message has been pretty clear on that piece of the report, that there was no, you know, he's not aware, he can't get into the head of staffers in the DEQ as to why they made the decisions they did, that there was no specific instance of racism per se. And, you know, there's been no evidence produced so far that would show, you know, racism, overt racism playing a role in what happened. But to be clear, the task force report also made it clear that they didn't have any evidence of that either. What they were essentially saying was it was more of an outcome-based analysis, that here you have a city where people were not treated the same the way other people in the state would be treated in the opinion of the task force. Mm-hmm. And that was their reason for applying the environmental injustice label.
It's Current State's Month in Review for March. We're visiting with Zach Gorchow of Gong News and Kathleen Gray of the Detroit Free Press, looking back on March's biggest news stories here in Michigan. Kathy, the drubbing the governor and EPA's Gina McCarthy took 2 weeks ago in Washington was epic or close to it. Did the governor's or Ms. McCarthy's appearance change anything?
Well, it certainly put it on a national stage. And it was brutal on for both the Democrat, you know, and it fell along partisan lines. Democrats really went after Governor Snyder, calling on him to resign.
Jason Chaffetz hit the governor pretty hard too, the chair of that committee, if I'm not mistaken, a Republican.
But he hit the EPA even harder.
Okay.
And there were Republicans calling on the EPA head to resign as well. And they even talked about criminal charges being brought, whether it should be against Governor Snyder or other people under his control or authority. That's to be said. But it was definitely a drubbing.
It certainly continued to make elected and important appointed officials continue to look pretty incompetent here.
I mean, for the governor, this was pretty devastating, almost 4 hours on nationally televised C-SPAN audience, nationally covered event. He really got cornered on a couple occasions. I mean, you could tell he was trying very hard. There were a number of I don't recalls or, you know, keeping things relatively vague. You know, he was testifying under oath. But he really got cornered at one point by a congresswoman from New Jersey who sort of almost like a very lawyerly pressed him into a non-answer about why he didn't go to the legislature for funding to put Flint back on Detroit water in early 2015. This is really before the lead stuff had come to light, but there had been almost a year's worth of complaints about taste, odor, smell, excess disinfectant, bacteria in the water, and he really didn't have a good answer for that.
A development that WKAR's been reporting this morning is worth bringing up here as well. A group challenging Michigan's emergency manager law is asking a federal appeals court to order a trial in the case. Now, a Detroit federal judge threw out most of this lawsuit earlier, but attorney John Filo, who is with the not-for-profit Sugar Law Center, says there are critical questions a court should decide. He wants to know whether it's legal for the state to transfer power from local elected officials to a political appointee. Here is Mr. Filo.
That hasn't been seen before. It's a novel issue for the courts. It's important, we believe, for the courts to finally say that, look, if the person has the legislative power to make laws, they have to be elected.
Any thoughts on this maneuver, Kathy?
Well, the emergency manager law is coming under scrutiny at all levels. That was part of the congressional hearing. They talked about that. One of the task force's recommendations also was that the emergency manager law needs to be revisited. Whether it gets a big hearing in the appeals court, I'm not sure how far it's going to go there. But there certainly is increased scrutiny on the emergency manager law, which basically takes away the authority of any locally elected officials, which was a big contributing problem in Flint.
It's something other than democracy. Pure democracy.
There is definitely blood in the water on the emergency manager law. You know, even the governor has now said it failed in regard to the Flint water situation. The task force was extremely critical of the emergency manager's performance in Flint and recommended some major changes to that statute. The governor, boy, he just doesn't seem to want to go there, but he's saying he's open to it. We'll see what happens.
We've had multiple investigations, reports, hearings in Lansing, hearings in Washington. We've had pretty significant email drops or dumps here now. I want to ask both of you, do you think we've learned everything that's really critical involving Flint, or do you feel there are more shoes to drop here? Kathy?
Well, there's ongoing investigations into the Department of Health and Human Services regarding the Legionnaires outbreak in Flint, where 10 people now have died. And there are multiple lawsuits out there that are going to be getting a lot more documents, things like that, that we may be learning some more from those.
You've got the criminal investigations at the federal and state level. And what do these lawsuits produce through discovery as far as text messages, emails from personal accounts from state employees? The stuff that's been seen so far from the official state accounts has been so bad, you almost shudder to think what's out there in text messages and personal emails.
Another angle that I find interesting here is you've had a lot of key players say at one time or another that first and foremost, we've got to address the problem on the ground in Flint. We got to get Flint right, kind of suggesting that the blame game needs to be secondary here. But this culpability piece will not go away. You just have the Fortune magazine story that broke yesterday involving America's most incompetent leaders, and Governor Snyder's at the top of the list. We've always been going in two directions here, culpability and what to do about the problem.
Well, there are people in Flint who want to blame someone,
yeah,
and who feel like someone should be held accountable for this. There's only been 3 people in the administration who have left as a result of this. There's still one person on suspension, but, they want heads to roll, and they haven't yet.
This was an important piece from the task force report. The governor's message since the State of the State has been that this was a failure of government at all levels, federal, state, local. The task force report, again, his task force, really went after that and was critical of that, called it an inappropriate public relations strategy, said it implied that their blame was equally shared, and in fact, the state is by far the most culpable, and basically told the governor, knock it off.
Let's try to get some other March stories here in the time that we have left. Federal officials on Tuesday announced charges against 14 people allegedly involved in a $908,000 scheme to bilk the Detroit public schools. This involves school supplies. Kathleen, can you walk us through this?
Well, this is an ongoing federal investigation into the Education Achievement Authority, which is basically almost a separate district that's set up to deal with the lowest performing schools in the state. All the schools are in Detroit. And this is the second round of charges that have, well, actually the third round of charges that have come through on people. And all of them have had to deal with getting with principals, administrators, and others getting kickbacks from vendors and for things like school supplies and things like that. So the school district was getting charged for all these school supplies that were supposed to be coming in, and they weren't. These are all allegations. These latest charges come against 14 people. It's 12 current and former principals. There's an administrator, and the vendor has also been charged in this.
What impact, if any, will this development have on discussions at the state capitol involving a long-term rescue of DPS? How might that play out?
Well, it's going to have a big impact. They're right at a very critical juncture right now. They approved almost $50 million last week to bail the district out to make sure that they don't run out of cash before the end of the year. But there's still $715 million, now $600 and some million, that has to be dealt with, that the district is in debt, and they want to create two different districts, a new one to basically run the school district and an old one that is only there just to pay off the debt. And that's state money that's going to go into that, and I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of people who are saying, why are we throwing good money after bad?
It was interesting to see the coverage of your paper in this yesterday. I'm not sure these were your stories necessarily, but Rochelle Riley, your columnist, used this as an opportunity to criticize the emergency manager law at some point in her column. And not just a few inches above that, I read that Speaker of the House Kevin Cotter used it as a way to kind of add legitimacy to the House's plan to save Detroit Public Schools. And it's, hey, the system needs more oversight. So the development is being used by different people in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of ignoring the reality, which is that this alleged corruption took place both when the district was under local control and under the control of an emergency manager. So for those trying to say, oh, this shows the emergency managers can't get it done, well, this was going on when the school board was fully empowered. And for those saying, well, there needs to be more state oversight, well, this was going on when there was a state emergency manager running the district. So there's some very deep-rooted corruption in the district. And this isn't the first time that there have been big charges leveled against school district employees. And you just wonder how much is going to have to be done to root it out.
The legislature was not in session this week. Am I right about
correct.
That? This was a break week. Where was the DPS? Where was the long-term DPS discussion at when they broke?
Well, the Senate, I think, is moving closer to approving its bills, that's really what's carrying the freight on this. They're still in committee, but said to be getting very close to putting a final product on the Senate floor. And once it goes through there, it'll go over to the House. But they've done a lot, but in terms of actual action, they haven't done a lot.
I'd like to spend a minute talking about the presidential primary contest. It seems like it was months ago, but it was March that Bernie Sanders pulled off his Michigan surprise, beating Hillary Clinton in our state. Donald Trump won on the Republican side. The smart money seems to be on Hillary for the nomination, but my question is, how did Michigan Democrats, I was out of the country at the time, legitimate question, how did Michigan Democrats really process the Sanders win?
Well, it was a historic turnout for the race. We had, 2.5 million people came out to vote. The next highest turnout was 1.9 million in 1972. And so it was just an enormous turnout on both sides, both the Republican and the Democratic side. And I think that, the polls were just so wrong on this. Up and down, and our paper too had a really bad poll with Hillary winning by 25%, and they're saying that we underestimated the young vote. And anybody who went to any of the Sanders rallies saw how enthusiastic and passionate young folks were for Bernie Sanders.
Any insights, Zach, into how Michigan Republicans feel about their thinned options? The field thinned this month.
Panic. Donald Trump is moving toward the nomination. It's still unclear if he's going to get the delegates he needs to win on a first ballot, but he certainly seems to be heading in that direction. If he does get that, there is just absolute horror that he's going to take the whole ticket down. And if he doesn't get it, there's horror about a contested convention with blood all over the floor on that.
Well, my understanding as well here, we got to wrap on this, but my understanding as well is if Trump doesn't succeed in the first round, a bunch of Michigan delegates are freed up to vote however they
That's
want,
right.
Which in this contest, in this primary, creates all kinds of interesting dynamics. We'll just have to keep an eye on it. I want to thank both of my guests, Zach Gorchow, Gongwer News, Kathleen Gray of the Detroit Free Press, on Current State's March Month in Review. Thank you both.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.